Welcome to the EQ Minds Recharge Your Mental Health podcast. I'm Chelsea Pottinger, the host of this show and founder of EQ Minds, where we empower you to take care of your mental health and well-being. We have decided at EQ Minds to take a pause on podcasts and meditations, and so today will be the last new episode for a little while. We want you to know that we are here and still completely dedicated to helping you take charge of your mental well-being. We have so much free content backlogged for you to visit, including hundreds of free meditations and podcasts. We hope you understand this decision of ours for the meantime. And so that being said, what better way to finish the season than with Sabina Reed, psychologist, human behavior expert, speaker, facilitator, and mentor. Sabina is on a mission to help you become the architect of your life through lived experiences and decades of study. Sabina shows you how to take your struggles, fears, and anxiety and work through them so that you can feel empowered, connected, and equipped for whatever life throws at you. In this episode, we talk about empaths. What is an empath? How to protect your energy as an empath? Compassion fatigue? How to fill up your own bucket? Navigating interpersonal relationships whilst managing your energy? And what Sabina does for her mental health. Sabina shares so many practical tools you can implement today. I got so much out of this episode, and I hope you do too. Let's get started. I'm so excited to have Sabina Reed here with us on the podcast today. Sabina, welcome to the EQ Minds show.
Great to be here, Chelsea. Didn't we just have a funny conversation about how connected we are, and yet we've never met?
I know. What is that? Yeah. I feel like I've known you for years.
So do I. And we, you know, have similar, well, interests and common friends and a lot of overlap in our work. We follow each other on Insta. I think we follow each other's pods. So it's great to see you kind of in person.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm really looking forward to this topic because I'm definitely one, and you just mentioned that you're an empath and my daughter's an empath, so this is going to be really beneficial for me to learn for myself. And it's something that I didn't learn about myself until I got a little bit older. So just for the audience that are listening who may not be aware of what an empath is, can you give us some background and maybe also some background to your story and how you got into psychology and this space?
Yes, okay. Let me start there. I'll start with my story and then we can get to the empath piece because it'll probably also help some make sense of some of that. So 17-year-old me says to my mum when I was at the end of year 12, I think I want to be a psychologist, but I don't want to listen to people's problems all day. Which sounds kind of, you know, counterintuitive, and yet I think it was highly intuitive. And in fact, in the context of this conversation, perhaps even 17-year-old me knew that I was an empath and thought if I sat with people's struggles all day, every day, that I would absorb that, because we know that empaths are, well, I would call them porous sponges. I won't say them, I'll call them us because you and I are in the camp. So yeah. Porous sponges. And by that I mean we feel without trying the emotions of others. And well, we'll get back to that. So 17-year-old me saying, I want to be a psychologist, I don't want to listen to people's problems. And so I actually went off and I did a degree in public relations and communications after school, because I didn't want to listen to people's problems. And truth be told, now I'm 52, I was 17 then, I still don't want to just listen to people's problems, because my natural state, my intuitive self, knows that we have such a capacity to problem solve when we listen to ourselves. No one knows us better than we do. We all have high levels of wisdom and intuition that we often ignore. And so that is the capacity in which I wanted to work with people then and now. But nonetheless, I went off on my comms career and then I did circle back and I retrained, you know, like not too long after as a psychologist. And again, when I say I'm a psychologist, people have this preconceived idea that I have a couch and a box of tissues and that you come in and you just cry around your inner child story and then you leave. And look, I do a little bit still of that clinical work, but not so much. I'm not taking on new clients. I'll never say no to an old client because the connection's really, it feels meaningful for me, and I think for them, many, many people that I've worked with. But I now do a lot of work, well, like you, as a facilitator, as a keynote speaker, a lot of work in the media. I do a regular radio gig. I've done a lot of TV through the years, and I have my own podcast, Human Cogs. So, yeah, I think it's fair to say I still don't want to listen to people's problems because I know there's another way. And yet in 1989, there was no positive psychology. It didn't exist. Mm-hmm. It wasn't on the map. And so we now know so much more about looking at hardship and struggle and adversity through a strength-based lens.
Mm, that's fantastic. It's so funny because my husband always says to me, you can't do private clinical work. He's like, you will get home drained from the day because you take on everything. And it's so interesting when you start being very aware of your unique makeup. And so this back to this kind of human porous sponge, you know, what do empaths do? What are we like, Sabina, as people, as empaths?
I mean, I think we need to be clear, or to watch perhaps, how much is this our natural state of being and how much of this is learned behavior, even at a time when we didn't know we were learning it, in order to please and connect, or whatever the unmet need was. So I am going to go on the inner child story now, having just told you that I've piffed the inner child with the tissue box. Of course, the inner child is a potent influential factor on who we are in our work, in our adult relationships, in our parenting, in the way we think about love, finances, health. You know, I could go on and on and on. And I don't think that's to be fearful of. I think it's to be aware of, because we take these templates with us and then we apply them in all of these domains in our adult life. And if we're not aware of where these stories, where these influences, where these unmet needs, where these patterns, where these behaviors have come from, then I think sometimes we become undone or come unstuck. But when we are aware, we know. So I think there's that learned, there's a nature nurture story here. Of course, some people are born more empathetic, more aware to the emotions of others, but I think there's definitely a learned piece to that. And I'm sure you've got a story around that. I think for me, something in my family of origin, when there was, even friction, when there was disconnect, I was acutely aware of it. And I think even as a small child, probably brought the skills to the table to facilitate, to share. I had a sense of inquiry and also to empathize. And I've been doing it ever since. So, it's really served me well in so many ways, and I feel really blessed with my personal and professional connections because I feel they're meaningful, they're rich, they're fulfilling, and they're satisfying. But then I go to the supermarket and I'm having this similar conversation with the person behind me, and it's me that spun around to talk to them because I feel them. I'm being a bit facetious, but or on an airplane, you know, the amount of times I've sat down and sort of asked someone left or right of me, and then by the end of the flight we're crying, we're hugging. So this just happens everywhere I go, and it's actually why I went back to retrain as a psychologist, because I thought this is still happening. 17-year-old me was on to something. Maybe it's best just to own it and, in fact, refine it, learn more, deep dive into it, and be remuneration for it instead of just doing it in the world around me. So I'm sure you'll have a lot of listeners that relate to that, and I do like that idea of sort of owning it and thinking there's a superpower there, but with every superpower there's a shadow side as well.
So I'd love to talk to you about maybe that shadow side too, because from a sense of almost like compassion fatigue, or even things like, for me, to be honest, like I can't go into mainstream huge shopping centres without feeling completely exhausted. You know, I get very overstimulated from a lot of noise or a lot of bright lights or a lot of strong smells or things like that. And I've got particular things in my kind of toolkit that I do to make sure that I'm going to be okay. And I think that's just come with awareness as I've got older and through therapy and things like that. But how do the people who are listening who may not have anything there in their toolkit, how do they protect themselves from any potential, I guess, not helpful influences that are coming around them, whether it's a person or whether, you know, the nonstop talker or whether it's the whether it is the shopping center with the bright lights and the sounds and the smells? Like, what are some things that we can do to look after ourselves?
Yeah, so first of all, I think that's important because you and I, you know, we both identify as empaths, many viewers and listeners will as well, but that pattern may look different for some people. So if you asked anyone that knows me well, they would say I'm highly social. When the sun goes down, I come out. I love to dance. I love to sing. I love karaoke. I can't do any, you know, the karaoke's terrible, but I love the sense of play and joy and sort of, play, enjoy, music, shenanigans, laughter. So a lot of people would say you want to be with people all the time because when I am on and, you know, it's showtime. And it's not a pretense. It's a genuine extension of who I am. And yet I also require a lot of time on my own. And I think we often use words on a spectrum or dichotomous words like extrovert and introvert and think that we belong to one camp or the other, and people would say, oh, you're so extroverted. One of the things I know is that empaths need a lot of self time because of this sense of overstimulation or this porous response to those around them. And as I said, that includes people around you who you're choosing to be with and people around you who you're not choosing to be with. And also random, so you just collide with as if you're in a ping pong machine without any intention whatsoever. So I think the question here becomes, the question we need to ask ourselves is, what fills me up? When do I feel, you know, most full? When do I feel empty? When do I feel a sense of energy? When do I feel depleted? And not to expect that anyone else, no one else, no expert, no partner, no parent, no boss, no guru can answer that question better than you can. And I think we're too quick to abdicate that sense of knowing. What you said, you know what's in your toolkit. Well, something I've said to many people over the years is if you had to write your own bespoke best-selling self-help guide, you would know what's in it. And yet we go and buy, and if I turn my camera around now, I've got bookshelves up to the ceiling in front of me that have every book known to mankind on them. We think that others will perhaps, and of course they do. Books are a wonderful resource and experts are a wonderful resource, and so are lived experience stories. But to be able to tune into yourself, and we need to give ourselves the space to do that. So we need to get out of the shopping center, or we need to get off the dance floor, or we need to step away from the office or the family or whatever, some of these wonderful people and aspects of our life, in order to just tune into self. And I think that is so much easier said than done. You know, I can espouse best practice. It doesn't mean that I follow my own guidelines all the time. Of course I do not. But I do believe that everyone has the capacity to write their own, I'm not going to call it a best-selling self-help guide, because the person who's going to want to buy it most is you. And and that's what matters. It doesn't need to have broad social appeal on the bookshelf. It needs to be meaningful to you, and then we need to find ways to honour each of those chapters. And so you're asking, how do we do that? Well, I mean, I know for me it's very much around self-time, as I've already said. It's around nature. This list is so obvious for many of us. When I was hiking recently, I felt just high on life. I felt like I had a sense of empowerment and freedom and lightness. And not surprisingly, on some of these hikes, I was talking to others, as I do. And then I made a choice. I was in a group I made a choice to leave the mountain solo, and I went down all the way down by myself. And that brought another sense of energy and peace and, I guess, knowing with self. So this is not a metaphor, it's just a story. I went up the mountain with people, I came down the mountain solo, and I would say both of those experiences with the stunning surrounds of New Zealand mountains were a true tonic. So there's something there around connection, there's something there around self alone time, and there's something there around nature. I know they're big for me. We all use the word boundaries, and I think boundaries are so important, but the word's lost its meaning. I hear a lot of people sort of throw the word around, but they're not practicing it, or they don't know what their boundaries are. I think work-life balance is another phrase that actually gives me the shits. And I'll tell you why, because it sort of sets us up for this this idea that we're going to have a perfect balance between A and B. We're never going to have a perfect balance between work and life. So why do we keep using that phrase, be gone with that?
It's so phrase. Interesting. It's more of an integration of everything, isn't it?
Because, Correct.
You know, with that, I feel very similar to you. You know, for me to fill up my bucket, because I feel like we're cut from the same cloth. I am so social. I was out in Bondi on Saturday. I'm having the time of my life, high energy, dancing. But then I need time to recharge the soul. So then I come home, probably had too many margaritas, to be honest. Yeah. Came home, bath, Andrea Bocelli, read a book.
Yes. Yes.
Asked Clara to sleep with me that night at my bed so I could cuddle her hand, you know, and things like that. Like, so that's like obviously a very, you know, different experience on the weekend to what I usually have. But say with keynote speaking, like what we both do, I love it. I feel in flow when I'm on stage. I love the energy of the audience. However, if I've got back-to-back keynotes on that night, I'm back at the hotel room reading a book, in a bath, you know, it's that whole thing of knowing what our body response, being in nature, is a huge thing. The blue ocean, the green, you know, therapy with being around hiking.
And
so it makes me think, we know this stuff, then why don't we do more of it? You know, I feel like people are like, I don't have time. And I'm like, but you're on social media for 3 hours a day. Like, it's so weird, the human being. I'm like, we know that stuff's crap for us. We know this stuff is really good for us. Why aren't we doing more of that? Why aren't we pausing and going, hey, I'm going to Arrowhow it doesn't need to be that expensive or that extravagant, which is amazing to do that stuff. Why aren't we doing more of it? Like on the weekend, why aren't we doing more of those kinds of things?
Well, I think it depends on the domain. We get rewarded. You know, having margaritas and singing with friends is rewarding in some ways. So is self time. So I think so are the mountains, so is the dance floor, so is the stage that we present from. I think it bodes well to ask, how am I being rewarded? What's the reward that I'm getting at this time? Is it affirmation? Is it validation? Is it freedom? Is it growth? Is it mastery? Is it purpose? Is it health? Is it fitness? And I think when we recognize that there's a whole array of rewards that are useful, instead of being perhaps tunnel vision and thinking I need more validation, more validation, more validation, that's too narrow a lens. But recognizing at the end of the day, through a behavioral model at least, I've been known to say we're kind of like rats with cheese. We're hopefully better looking, but we know where you go to get the cheese. You're going to keep hitting that bar, and yet we're smarter than the average rat. So we need to be able to hit multiple bars for different kinds of cheese.
And we love cheese.
because it's got feel good ingredients in it that actually make your brain light up. So we do love cheese.
So So do you feel like empaths and people pleasers go, they're quite, not correlated, but they sit kind of in the same bucket? And I think that's why maybe sometimes, because we're always thinking about other people, that's why setting those healthy boundaries in relationships is quite challenging for an empath to do. They're worried that they're going to hurt someone's feelings.
Mm-hmm. I think they're good bedfellows, definitely those, you know, people pleasing and empaths. But the other thing that might be a reward, so I talked about rewards that were a bit more obvious. Another reward for an empath can be deflection. If I focus on you, then I don't focus on me. So I think, again, let's be clear about, and these are going to, we're not one way or the other. We're probably, as an empath, doing all of these things. So sometimes we might be deflecting. Sometimes we might be seeking validation. Sometimes we want to people please and help another person. None of these things are good or bad. They just are. And we need to take the judgment away and just make sense of how we learned it. When did it serve us well? Is it still serving us well? How can we shift? Do we need to shift or change that? And I guess ultimately, at what cost? At what cost does it come? So if you're an empath and you find yourself saying, I'm constantly exhausted, I'm constantly depleted, I'm giving too much, I'm feeling resentful, this seems to happen to me, you know, at work, at home, and everywhere in between, you know, that's there's a call to action. There's an invitation there. But if you feel that you connect and give all the time and everywhere and you feel full, maybe there's no call to action there. I think what a lot of us do, though, is we tend to dial this up in certain parts of our life, and then in other parts of our life, the tank's quite empty. And if I had to hazard a guess how that looks for a lot of empaths, it might be the people closest to us that get the empty us. Just a reflection, or it's just a question I'm putting out there to you, to me, to your listeners. At what cost to relationships most dear to you, perhaps?
That's a really good question and a good thing to think about too. So my 8-year-old's going to get home soon, and Clara is an empath. And you mentioned before there were some great things that you could do to sit in reflection, you know, and just work out what serves you. Is it still serving you? Where do you get your energy from? Like, how does that fill your bucket? Are they things that I can sit down with her and ask her, and we just journal them down together? It might be for her to jump on the trampoline, or, you know.
I think you'll find that 8-year-old Clara will be able to answer those maybe more quickly than her mother or her mother's pod guests even. I think if you say to her, when do you feel most, and you use the language that you know sits with her, alive, energized. I try not to use, I mean, an 8-year-old might use the word happy. Happy is not a word I use liberally. I think it's misunderstood and misused often. So I like to be more specific about what it is that you want to feel. For me, I want a sense of vitality. I want a sense of connection. I want a sense of purpose. I want a sense of joy. I want a sense of play. So my questions will be, when do I feel those things? But yours might be different and Clara's might be different too. But I think it helps to tease out from this umbrella term happiness. It's also inviting with children to broaden their emotional,
vocab.
Yeah, vocab, their emotional vocab, yeah. Which helps them explore how they feel, what they want to feel more of, and when do they feel it. So, yeah, I don't think there's an age range that this is relevant to. I think this is relevant across the lifespan. And you could ask a 90-year-old the same question. In fact, we need to. We need to be asking this question across the lifespan and not make assumptions that we know what others need and what fills their cup. Because when we do that as a parent, we're going off piste now, but when we do that as a parent, we take away the invitation for the child to tap into what they know they feel, because then they want to please or they want to emulate what they see in a parent. That was an aha.
That was an aha.
Yeah, I saw.
That was an aha. Yeah, I was just looking up going, yes, I need to do this with Clara. Also, I feel like, you know, with friendships and things like that, it's the awareness piece of the friends that when you're around them, you walk away from the situation or just uplifted and vibrant and feeling good about yourself. And then there's other people who just, you just come away from it feeling exhausted and fatigued. And I think that's just an awareness piece as well, like what you're saying, and seeing that with our children's friends.
Yes. Yes, and often even in childhood, you know, we're drawn to, or and in adulthood, we're drawn to people who may not be good for us, who might not make fill up our cup or leave us feeling lighter or brighter. You know, we may, particularly as a child, want to be in the cool group, and then we come away feeling sort of less than or underconfident or a little bit self-questioning. So, yeah, just to be aware of all of these responses. And yet, having said that, I mean, you're referring to what I would call quite crassly a drainer. And when you're in the presence of a drainer, of course it drains you. And yet I don't think you can live a life without coming into contact with people who drain you. So it's that's too black and white, I think. We need to acknowledge that across our working day and across our personal life, we're going to come into people who some raise us, some lower us. I mean, the research sort of says that we need, of course, more people that lift us than people that drain us, because so that's the same sort of, I'm going to even guesstimate the same ratio of 5 to 1. Let's just say that. We know that research, which sits very much like from the Gottman Institute, around exchanging 5 to 1 positive sentiments, statements, expressions of emotion in order to overcome that one negative interaction. And I think it's not that different with humans. So if you've got 5 people that lift you of a day and 1 that's drained you, I think that's a doable. That's not going to bring you down. But of course, we know that negative exchanges are more potent than positive. So that's why we need this override, this higher number, this higher ratio. So I don't think it's that we need to demonize everyone that doesn't lift us up. But I think we need to be aware of that and perhaps choose the amount of time we spend with those people.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah.
Particularly if we have a drainer in the family that we can't kind of just spring clean out like what we can do with some friendships, and we have to see these people on the regular. Is that the just being very aware of the time you're spending with them, like shorter, sharper bursts? You know, like I always think with family, I love my family, like they're awesome, but I always think it's like the 3-day fish rule. You know, you only go and stay for 3 nights. Because then, like, the family goes off, right? You get them for 3 days, everyone's great, they're all in good energy, and then we kind of leave. And we do that more regularly. But I was just thinking, for people who are listening who might have a drainer in their family, it's exhausting, but they can't kind of get rid of them. What do we do?
Yeah, so I think we do need to limit time. Sometimes it's appropriate, and this is really dependent on the person, whether it's in the family or in a professional setting, to just express, you're not going to say you're a drainer, but you might say something like, when I notice when we're together, we often talk about such and such, and I'd also like to discuss, oh, I'd like to talk about other topics or share other things, and I wonder how you feel about that too. So,
that's nice.
Yeah, you're just acknowledging almost from a bird's eye view. But you're also bringing a level of curiosity, because they might say, I wish I didn't talk like this all the time. It drives me bonkers as well. So there's there's an invitation there to shift the dynamic if the relationship feels hopeful and it's one that you either want to maintain, need to maintain, or feel that you will always maintain for whatever reason. I think the other thing we can do is dial up. A lot of people talk about this is going to sound a bit sort of wacky, but whether it's white light around you or a space around you or something that helps you visualize when you're feeling depleted. And you might need to dial that up and down depending on who and where and when you're at.
I'm all for that. I've got such a wacky technique that my therapist taught me, which I love, which is around visualizing mirrors around me that's reflecting that energy back to them. So I'm actually not absorbing that energy in. So it's that bright light protecting me that then almost like a mirror reflects that energy back to them. So it's almost like a visualization of a protection shield almost. And to be honest, it kind of works. Like it really works well for me.
Mm. And if you're imagining the white light or the mirror, you might lean in less than your natural empath self would. You might ask less questions, less deep questions. You know, I think we know the power of visualization is potent. So mirrors is when you said that, I was picturing Wonder Woman with a cuffs. You know, it's like literally deflect. But you just don't have an invisible jet.
Yeah. And if they ask you what you're doing, you're like, I'm just deflecting the drainer, which is you.
I mean, I think compassion goes a long way too. No one wants to be the drainer. Who wants to be the person at the boardroom or the party or the family table who everyone's like, you know, not with them. So I think there is room for compassion alongside the Wonder Woman cuffs. I think there's compassion in both.
I love that. I love the Wonder Woman cuffs. This is good.
And look, I've sort of got a few. I just looked in the picture.
Oh, yeah. You do. I'm not.
I think this is such an important conversation to have. I think one of the biggest takeaways, I think, is around self-time. And I think we're fearful of that. I think and when I talk about self-time, I'm not saying sitting on your phone, I mean actually being with yourself. And in that space and in that time, you might find some illuminating insights about where some of this empath behavior comes from and what more of it you want, what less of it you want. Instead of saying born an empath, always an empath, or born an extrovert, always an extrovert, we're more multidimensional than that. And we talked already briefly, Chelsea, about the shadow side. Every behavior has a shadow side to it, so it's worth exploring that as well. And, you know, to know that many of our behaviors we brought on board to protect our little child, and we may not need to continue to do that as an adult.
Love that. Sabina, I could talk to you for ages. Thank you so much for your insights today. Since this is a mental health podcast, I feel like I already know what you do now, but what are the three ways that you take care of your mental health every single day?
I think animal touch is very big for me. And you just heard, I've just got another puppy, but we've also got an old dog. But there's something so cathartic about stroking an animal. And also it takes me away from other distractions. I become very mindful, I think, in the presence of animals. I've already talked to you also about nature. So beach, as you said, green or blue, whether it's water, I'm more of a beach girl actually, but I commit to myself every day. I do a fitness class or a Pilates class, and people often say, that's what, 6 times a week you do that? That's 6 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you know, I do a lot of stuff in my weeks like you. There's a lot of travel, a lot of variety, a lot of clients, a lot of demands. 6 hours out of a total week is not really that many hours that I'm, and so that's kind of a non-negotiable. And then, as I said, I think I treasure my friendships, I treasure my relationships, and I do need a sense of play and fun. And anyone that, you know, sort of says you get to a certain age and that's not a priority, you know, come fight me and my Wonder Woman cuffs, because I'll take you on. I'll take you on with that. I won't deflect you. I will invite you onto the, you know, dance floor of life, because if there's no fun, well, there's a full circle story here, isn't there? If you're not having play and you're not having fun, you might be the drainer that people are trying to stay away from.
That's so true.
So if you feel like people are giving you a wide berth. I would ask yourself, what do you do? Yes. What have you done today that was playful and joyous? That's a good question to ask yourself when your head hits the pillow at night. And it's different to the gratitude, and it's different to the proud of, and it's different to the growthful. It's joy and playful, bloody stop, mm-hmm. right there.
Oh, Sabina, I love it. I love it. I love playing every day. I'm like a big child at heart. I think that's why having Clara as well in my life, she brings so much joy. It makes me be a kid 24/7, which is beautiful. Sabina, where can my gorgeous audience find out more about you and your incredible work? Where should we send them? And I can add it to the show notes down below. Yes.
I think the best place to go, I'm on Instagram under Sabina Read. It's R-E-A-D, like read a book, as I like to say. My podcast that I co-host with Mads Grummet is called Human Cogs, C-O-G-S, and they're human stories. There's some extraordinary and incredible guests that fill my mind and my heart and my soul. And then my website, Sabina Read Psychology. But other than that, you might find me, you know, in a on a beach, on a mountain, or on a dance floor. And if you do, come say hi.
I love that. Thanks so much, Sabina, for today.
Yeah, great to chat to you, Chelsea. Thank you.
You too. You too. This podcast and the information contained therein is made available for educational purposes only and is not intended to provide medical advice. This information should not be used as a substitute for competent medical advice from a licensed specialist, doctor, or psychologist. Thank you.